Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new Smart Firefighting miniseries created during the Phase 5 of the First Challenge, hosted at the Miskatonic Urban Training Center. The First Challenge focus is to produce marketable prototypes that demonstrate indoor localization tracking of first responders within 1 meter accuracy without any pre-deployed infrastructure. Many of you heard stories from Phase 4, and here in Phase 5, the challenges were increased by including multiple responders, longer durations, and longer distances. In these conversations, you will hear from many of the entrepreneurs, first responders, and team members involved that address these challenges and opportunities of X, Y, and Z axis tracking from multiple perspectives around scalability, usability, affordability, and more. This challenge is administered by the Indiana University Crisis Technology Innovation Lab and funded by the NIST Public Safety Communication Research PSCR Division. Also, consider putting the NIST 5x5 conference on your calendar, located in Chicago, June 25th to 27th, 2024. Enjoy this deep dive into first responder tracking technology, and please reach out with your thoughts. In the depths of our mini-series here at First Phase 5 in Miskatonic, Indiana, alongside Andrew Power with Ravenswood Solutions. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Good. Good to be back. Happy to be back at Mutsy.
It's really great to be here. And I will say, just kind of seeing the magic in the air of the kind of the slight level of like tension and angst amongst the competitors, while also having all these different stakeholders from DHS, NIST, XPRIZE. It's just sort of like that magic in the air you see when all these people get together.
Yeah, I think there's this balance between anxiety and then just acceptance, you know, maybe at this point as we get towards the end, the trials go how they go. It's cool. Our common operating picture gives us a pretty good idea how we're performing live, so we don't have to kind of cross our fingers as long. We worked really hard to get here from Phase 4, and so we're happy to be here and get it done and look forward.
Well, I know that this, a lot of what I see from Ravenswood is different from Phase 4 to Phase 5. What were some of the lessons learned from Phase 4 and from what I'm seeing this week and kind of what I'm holding my hand right here? What's different in Phase 5?
Yeah, so there was kind of two categories on the to-do list. You know, one was stuff that we wish we could have done at Phase 4, and the other one was stuff that we learned at Phase 4, you know, edge cases where performance wasn't good because of something about the environment and the trials. So example there would be, you know, smoke environment. We kind of saw that coming. We didn't have a ton of opportunity before Phase 4 to test like that. But we went into that fire trainer in Phase 4, you know, and the vision tracking just dropped. And so said, what can we do? And in this case, you know, we implemented more inertial. The tracker itself figures out the quality of the vision tracking it's getting. And if that drops below a certain point, it starts to use more inertial input. And then in the same vein, the inertial sensor does a little bit of training while you do have good tracking. So it's counting and measuring steps while you do have good tracking so that it can interpret better in case you lose vision. Another one, you know, dark room, whether from smoke or anything else, is challenging on the vision. So I don't know if you remember at Phase 4, but we saw some of that the first day. And so we went back in that evening and we glued a headlamp from Walmart on the front of it. And that was kind of okay to do at Phase 4. They said they didn't want us to do stuff like that at Phase 5. So we actually put an infrared LED with a window inside because one of our police partners at the trial said, I would rather not have a headlamp sticking off my chest while I'm searching a building. And I said, that sounds fair. So the camera is sensitive enough to infrared that you know, effectively lights up the room for the vision tracking without having to betray your position in case you're in a, you know, a security situation where you don't want to do that.
And here at Phase 5, I mean, there wasn't the governor house, and I think there was this ruggedization test. But from the additional people, and even I noticed at the hospital yesterday, there was law enforcement and EMT, and then here you've seen firefighters. How have you approached and sort of what's some of the design philosophy and around looking at not only fire, but also law and EMS?
Yeah, probably number one is just the most universal, simple kind of mounting system that we can have, you know, decent security, knock it off, not get them caught up, not have them stand there for 10 or 15 minutes while you're trying to sew it onto their vest or whatever. And then, you know, just not burden them any more than we have to. We don't want stuff to get in their way to weigh them down. As we, you know, look forward, keep getting that form factor down and down and down, make it look like something they recognize so it's easy for that user community to kind of accept it as a piece of instrumentation rather than something scary and different and new.
So from the experience and from the Ravenswood team, I mean, anything surprise you or kind of catch you by surprise phase five in your past couple of days here?
Most surprising was how dang long this tunnel is.
Yeah.
You know, we said we're going to the prison complex again. I said, okay, no problem. You know, we pretty much tracked almost all the way through that tunnel last time. Calm shouldn't be a problem. And they went the other way with it and went half a mile down underground. So eventually we did lose comms, but it tracked pretty far down that tunnel. And that's probably the only real surprise. Pleasant surprise, I would say, is we performed a little better than we even expected to in the ruggedization testing. We made it through the whole oven session, tracking the whole time and came
out. We haven't talked about the ruggedization session. Could you explain what that was?
Yeah, so there were several parts. First, we went 10 minutes at 320 Fahrenheit. And literally a air fryer, you know, off the shelf air fryer. And the key with the ruggedization was not just visibly broken or not, but, you know, it had to run before, during, and after and continue to work, which I think is, you know, is good for realism. After that, we went straight into a garbage can full of water. So call it 3 feet deep of water for 5 minutes and then a 4 foot drop and an 8 foot drop. So that email came out not too long before the trials, and we said, wow, that's a little more severe than we expected. So what can we do, you know, in the next couple of weeks? And we didn't do a whole lot, but I was still overall pretty pleased with the way that the units reacted to the testing.
Yeah.
Certainly that's something we'll consider as we get, you know, closer to a product that would be for sale.
So on that note of for sale and just the roadmap to commercialization, I mean, it's October 2023 and the phase five first challenge is coming to an end. What's next and how are you approaching continuing to try and take this and get into the hands of first responders?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and I said this to the judges last night, you know, it's the end of the challenge, but it's not the end of the journey, the project, the product. Obviously, we have stuff in mind about what we want it to look like and how big we want it to be and other performance specs and ruggedization specs. The step from here is hope that, you know, our performance in the challenge, things like this podcast, meeting people at this event, kind of drums up enough potential business where we can create a theoretical business case for ourselves that says, okay, let's spend this much money making it a really good product based on I can sell this many at this price afterwards. And, you know, we're lucky that our kind of core market with DoD supports, you know, high player counts, right? High volume. So the way I look at that is if this is going to cost $1,000, you know, to throw out a made up number, if I can sell 50 of them, then it's going to look exactly like it looks today. If I can sell 50,000 of them, it's going to look a lot more like an iPhone, you know, or something small and compact and sexier, you know, basically. So it's try to make that case where we can put really intense resources, time, and money into making it an awesome product that just works right off the shelf.
Yeah, that's great. And then I also, just for maybe the context of people who don't really know Ravenswood Solutions and even kind of the whole company backstory, what kind of, who didn't give me a little background on Ravenswood and then sort of kind of the alignment that you have with some of the other partners.
Right. So yeah, so Ravenswood is a subsidiary of SRI International, and the reason that, and so SRI is like the, what's called the original Silicon Valley Research Institute. The reason we split out is because the work we were doing with the National Guard grew and grew and grew and became profitable, and that doesn't work with SRI's, you know, classification as a not-for-profit. So around 2015, we spun out, and our core, which is to say one-legged table at that time, was, you know, training, National Guard training, and we had a couple other small programs, but that was, say, 90% of our revenue. We've diversified quite a bit since then, but still we're pretty focused around what we sell. We would call instrumented after action review. So how you get the data can vary, you know, what's the instrumentation, but the idea is we want people to train like they fight, and then immediately be able to come back and review that with high fidelity, you know, with true ground truth, with a good user interface where they can see and understand that data played back to them, with short latency and then learn from that, you know? So you skip the part where you're trying to remember who's right about what you did or didn't do, look straight at the ground truth and then learn from it right away.
So you've got some past DoD framework and knowledge and experience from a customer standpoint, and I'm sure a lot of your team. How is kind of that experience of working in the very deep and closely with DoD help translate, or how have you used that or leveraged that to continue to apply that for first responder solutions?
Couple ways. I mean, one, even our Army tracker, dismount tracker, the name Freddie is an acronym that had first responder in it. So State of South Carolina came to us around 2011 and said, you know, we need situational awareness during disaster response. So that was that first dismount kind of size tracker that we made. So we kind of been tuned in with that. Another one is just, you know, a profound respect for the work that's being done by the user community. So, you know, with the Army, I don't look at it as being better at fighting, but less loss of life all the way around by being trained better. And so that obviously connects with the, you know, the first responder community. Like, let's save as many lives as possible through use of technology, whether it's augmenting training or live, you know, active duty situational awareness. And then through experience, I would say with these communities is understand how important and impactful the user experience is. The best tracker in the world is worthless if nobody wants to wear it because it's annoying or it's hard to use. So really focusing on that, you know, design for the user.
I love that focus. And I want to even go a little bit deeper around the change management aspect. I mean, what have you experienced, or what are your thoughts in regards to how they get end users to actually do something different and to actually integrate new technology to ideally make their jobs better, but also it is making a difference. So that's a challenge.
Right. You know, I was talking to Ari this morning too, and he's like, he was a medic for a long time and he's part of the first team. And he's like, in my experience, it was see something save your life or save somebody's life and you kind of hang on to it. There is a lot of momentum, you know, and it's, I think the paradigm has changed a little bit generationally, and younger people are a little bit easier to embrace new technology. But really what they have to do is they have to just see it work and see it help them. The help to them has to be tangible. Certainly, I'm sure in our careers, somebody comes in, a consultant to somebody who said, hey, we're going to use this new efficiency tool at work. And you have to sit through an hour seminar about how it works. And I said, that's extra work to me, right? You have to see it tangibly help you, I think, to accept it. And so, you know, even if this initial rollout of this type of project from us is in a training kind of niche within firefighting, I think that's kind of a great path to acceptance, right? Because you would see as a firefighting trainee, cadet, student, I don't know what they call them, but somebody who's ready to become a firefighter goes through a training scenario and gets to sit down 5 minutes later and look at an instrumented after action review and learn something about what they did that they didn't notice because, you know, their nerves were high, their adrenaline was high, they ran up and down the stairs, did whatever they needed to do. But being able to go back and play that and replay it with ground truth and understand, and they said, you know, I learned in a couple days what might have been a couple weeks how to do this right. You know, there's some trust built on that. And seeing that the map that they get back is reflective of real life, it looks like the way they went through the building, build that trust, then maybe you can start extending it to saying, hey, this will help me if I'm in trouble in real life.
Yeah, I love that perspective. And that's the sort of, I've done a lot of work within virtual reality training, and there you're able to record the scene and be able to play it back. And similar to what you just said within training towers, the ability to kind of have that Monday morning quarterback perspective in terms of being able to play back. Why did you do this? Why did you go there? And what was going through that decision-making process, right? I do agree that I think training situations are going to be a good place to see this technology in the crawl, the walk phase here, and hopefully further adoption in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, give them the opportunity with a lower risk way to start using it and build some trust in it. And at the same time, still make the product better, right? Because, you know, it's going to be brand new onto the scene. I'd rather have not maybe lives at stake for the first year that this is being rolled out, for example.
Yeah, well said. And I would be remiss to not slightly pivot the conversation, but to first compliment your shoes. I grew up wearing Vans.
Thank you, me too.
rep the Vans, but more so the shirt. You're wearing a mushroom shirt. It's a shirt that I would be wearing, but you're wearing it. Why the mushroom shirt?
You know, it's a fun looking shirt. I just figured people would have remembered me if they had talked to me today. They said, did you talk to Ravenswood? I don't remember. Did you talk to the guy with the mushroom shirt? Oh yeah, I did talk to that guy.
I remember that guy.
Yeah. And you know, and they're fascinating, interesting kind of life form.
But the
as a gardener, they helped me too.
In the gardening point, the point you said earlier, but the power of mushrooms. And one thing I think in looking at the network underneath and the whole idea of mycelium, I think that kind of last night from when everyone was collaborating, working, that sort of maybe a little representation of kind of the power of mushrooms and power of networking.
Sure. Yeah. You know, interconnectedness and communication. Absolutely.
And just kind of keep it rolling. So I appreciate the context and the mission.
Yeah.
And
I'll retroactively say that's why I wore it for the interconnectedness.
Yeah. I'm all for it. Well, I guess kind of final thing, if I could give you a chance to say a final mic drop of any a comment, a question, a quote, an insight, a challenge, you know, anything that you could leave us with here today.
Wow. Oh, that's putting me on the spot. I don't know. We just feel privileged to have been here. It was such a lucky chance that we met Sunny a couple of years ago. It's been awesome to meet and participate in this community. Certainly igniting a passion, you know, to really want to do a great job with this product. Looking forward. And yeah, just opened my eyes to kind of different ways to incentivize good development between getting your name out there, you know, cash prizes, getting to meet people, going to cool conferences. We had an awesome time at the 5x5 this June. So yeah, I don't know. I don't maybe have profound advice for the next team, but just kind of like a thankfulness to everybody who put this together and for our chance to participate.
Well said, Andrew. Forever grateful and look forward to continue to collaborate in the future.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. What did you think? What did you learn? Hopefully something, right? Please reach out on social media with your thoughts on this episode and any other suggestions for future content. We look forward to capturing more important stories across public safety and are here at your service.